Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, and we're back to do it again right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. A lot to get into, local and national. Coming up tonight, we have high school basketball right here on KOAL. The Emory Spartans will take on the Union Cougars, this one taking place at the Spartan Center in Castle Dell. Emory looking to get back on the winning track following a loss last week to Juan Diego in a game that was very competitive. It was very entertaining. It's 52-48, Juan Diego at the end of the third quarter, and then the Soaring Eagles took over in the fourth. It's a great basketball team. I was really proud of the way Emory played. I think when you look across the board in the 3A classification, I don't know that you're going to find a more athletic team than what we saw Saturday night at the Spartan Center. Union, they're returning to the court tonight. Lost last night to Uinta. We'll break down this game. Coach Cincinnurus will join us over the phone. That's coming up next segment. We'll talk about last week's loss to Juan Diego. We'll talk about tonight's game against Union. We'll also preview Friday's game against South Summit. We'll travel on the road for that one. It'll be in Camas. Those two squads always put together entertaining contests. State tournaments, regular season, it doesn't matter. It's always entertaining when those two teams share the court. So we'll talk some high school sports in just a moment. It's a long drive tonight for the Carbon Dinos. They're on the road taking on the Delta Rabbits. Also, we had two swim meets yesterday. Both Carbon and Emory, we had the Carbon Lady Dinos dominate North St. Pete last night, so there's a lot of sports to get into on the local front, and we'll do that in just a few moments. Also on the show today, we have to talk college football. We had the new rankings released last night, and there's no surprise. There hasn't really been any surprises all year long. There are five teams that control their own destiny. That's it. And one of the teams that control their own destiny is currently number six, and that's Florida. The only team that does, outside of the top four. Alabama's fine. Notre Dame and Clemson should be fine. Ohio State, I guess now they're fine, and we'll get into that in just a moment. I was curious to see where BYU would fall. They dropped five spots all the way down to number 18. Coastal Carolina moves up five spots to number 13. And so the playoff committee views Coastal Carolina in a similar sense that they viewed BYU going into that game this past Saturday. I want to look at the worst case scenario for all squads inside the top four. What happens that could prevent one of these four from not getting in? Because the rankings have been very lackluster, one through four, each of the three times they have been released. Now, with that being said, we have to talk about Ohio State. Ohio State will, in fact, play in the Big Ten Championship after the conference made a rule adjustment. And this doesn't quite sit well with a lot of people. A lot of people are upset about it. The conference made the announcement this afternoon. The administrative council, made up of all athletic directors and administrators, voted to eliminate the minimum game requirement, which they had set, and it's quite obvious as to why they did. Ohio State needs that sixth game. I still don't think six games is enough for the committee to give them a ruling. If things go haywire, I mean, if we're talking Notre Dame defeats Clemson, Florida defeats Alabama, I think you really have to sit back and look at leaving the Big Ten out of the playoffs. I truly believe that. And I'll touch on this a little bit later on in the show. And I get it's not Ohio State's fault, right? Michigan, they canceled the game. Illinois, Maryland. I mean, it's not Ohio State's fault. I understand that completely. And Ohio State did, in fact, beat Indiana 45-32 last month. Indiana would have been in the conference championship game had it not been for that loss to Ohio State. But right, they'd have beat Ohio State, they would have been in, and this would be a non-factor. It's kind of difficult to send Indiana knowing that they lost to Ohio State. And I said this on the show yesterday, that I was okay with the ruling based off of that alone. Ohio State beat Indiana. But I'm going to ask this question. If the shoe was on the other foot, if Indiana was 5-0 and Ohio State was 5-1, would the Big Ten have changed this? Would they have made it a fluid situation? I mean, really, when you look at it, every athletic director within the conference is going to vote to change the rule because they want a share of that playoff money that Ohio State will get. That revenue is spread across the entire conference. So I understand why the entire conference would look at it and say, yeah, let's change it. It's not as if Indiana has a chance to go to the college football playoff. But because the Big Ten is allowed to change rules this late, and they are, leads me to believe that the SEC and the ACC specifically, should look at changing their rule. For instance, Notre Dame, Clemson in the ACC title game. I think Notre Dame and Clemson are both in if that game is not played. Should the ACC cancel that conference championship game? Why not? You're going to get two teams in the college football playoff. I don't care if Ohio State wins the Big Ten or not. There's no possible way you could take a 6-win Ohio State team over a 10-win Notre Dame squad, unbeaten, or a 9-win Clemson squad only lost to the number 2 team of the country. The ACC could do that. Would it be right? Probably not. But the Big Ten decides to change their rules later on in the season. The SEC, same thing. If Florida was to beat number 1 Alabama in the SEC title game, and Clemson was to beat Notre Dame, there's a chance Alabama and Notre Dame could actually drop down and Ohio State has a chance to impress the pollsters. At that point in time, Notre Dame and Alabama would have played 10 games, but would it matter? Because they both had losses. How would the committee view that? I just think it's very hard to take Ohio State, a team that played 5 games. Notre Dame, Clemson, Alabama all played double the amount of games that Ohio State has played. But the College Football Playoff Committee, they have spoken quite highly of Ohio State throughout the entire process. I mean, even if Ohio State did not play, as soon as Ohio State played, they had them in their top 4. And I think you have to look at the eye test, and I know that there are a lot of variables to consider, but I can't get past the inconsistencies of college football this season. I thought everything was going to play out the way it should, and I still believe, even if Clemson beats Notre Dame or Alabama beats Florida, Florida getting a win over Alabama could really change things. But if Bama was to beat Florida, regardless of what happens in the ACC title game, I think there's a great chance that we see these 4 squads. We just flip how they play in the opening round. I think that's possible. I think it's going to be hard for a 1-loss A&M squad to get in. It's impossible for a 2-loss Florida team to get in. I think we're still just about set. But it may be one of those seasons where it doesn't play out in favor of the committee. And the committee has some very difficult choices to make to get us down to the Final Four. Remember, the Pac-12 was almost completely ruled out because you can't take a 6-win Pac-12 team. Can't put one of those squads in the college football playoff. It worked out because nobody in the Pac-12 is worthy of getting into the Final Four. But it seemed like that was something that had been determined before the season ever started. The Pac-12 season is just, there. None of those teams have a chance of getting into the playoffs. That same logic didn't apply to the Big Ten. And preconceived opinions matter in college football. Preseason rankings matter. If they shouldn't, I agree with you, but they do. Okay, and I just feel like the Pac-12 had no chance at all this season. None. Regardless of what would have happened. None. And if it wasn't for the ACC and the SEC, we may not even have a college football season this year. Those were two conferences that were hell-bent on getting a season. They have played 10, it'll be 11 games for these squads. And Ohio State gets in after playing 6? You have a problem with that. Doesn't quite seem fair, does it? And that's why the committee was put in place to begin with. The College Football Committee was created for fairness. I just don't feel like it's been quite fair this year. Look, even if Clemson loses to Notre Dame, I would still take them. Seriously, I think they're a top four team in the country. That's what the committee's telling us. We got to look at the eye test, right? Don't pay attention to records. We got to look at the eye test. Well, if Clemson loses to Notre Dame on a neutral site, well, they lost at Notre Dame and they lost at a neutral site. I still think they're a top four team in the country. Put them in. That's basically where we're at this year with college football. And look, that trickled down all the way to BYU. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to start paying attention to strength of schedule? Well, why? Who is Ohio State beat outside of Indiana? I just see a lot of inconsistencies this year. And I knew that that was a very possible scenario going in. I was hoping it would play itself out, and now I'm not quite sure it will. I think there's some teams that have some gripes, viable gripes. We'll talk more college football a little bit later on in the show. Let's move over to the NBA, the James Harden drama. With the new NBA season beginning in less than 2 weeks, James Harden is still a member of the Houston Rockets, but now he can't participate in any team activities. He must have 6 consecutive negative COVID-19 tests before the league will clear him to practice with the team. And it's just another obstacle in what's been a bizarre offseason for Harden and the Houston Rockets. 2 days after the Rockets held their first team practice, Harden demanded to be traded to a contender and did not report. If he continues to test negative, he could be back on Monday. After the practice today, the Rockets, they're kind of uncertain about when he's going to be cleared to practice. Because the way this all works now that we're heading into the new season, the NBA requires players to test negative for COVID-19 for 3 consecutive days before even entering team facilities for individual workouts. Players are also required to quarantine aside from testing and workouts at the team facility. That includes just regular activities. I mean, it's going out and about, grocery shopping, whatever it may be. Harden decided to work on his own at the University of Houston. Then he went to a birthday party in Atlanta over the weekend, spent a few nights in Vegas, did not wear a face mask at the birthday party or in Vegas, violated the league's COVID-19 protocols, and that also matters. It goes back to what happened with the Denver Broncos a few weeks back when they had 4 quarterbacks. Yes, 4. Violate the team's COVID-19 rules. Same thing happening with James Harden. And now he just becomes even more of a headache for the Houston Rockets organization as they refuse to trade him. And again, I've said this before. I wouldn't deal him. He's not a contract here. He's got 2 more seasons. And I don't know if Harden plays his cards right, if he ends up in Brooklyn, if he ends up in Philly, wherever he ends up. But if I'm the Rockets, I'm not trading this guy. Not yet, anyway. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. Most of it is geared towards college football, a little NFL here and there, and we will talk more football coming up in just a bit. I want to pause for a quick commercial break. When we return, we'll be joined by Coach Jeff Centenaris of the Emory Spartan basketball team. That's coming up next right here on Drive Time Sports.
What you listening to?
Big sports radio guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
High school basketball makes its return tonight right here on KOAL. First game since Saturday night. That was when Emory suffered a loss to Juan Diego. It was a compelling game. 52-48 Juan Diego at the end of the third quarter. Emory actually held a lead in that third quarter, and then it just kind of trickled away in the fourth. Juan Diego, a very good 4A team, returning 4 of 5 starters from last year's semifinal squad. It was a great challenge for Emory. Tonight, a familiar opponent. They'll take on the Union Cougars. Live coverage of tonight's game will begin at 6:30 p.m., and then we will have tip-off at 7. We're going to talk about last week's game to Juan Diego. We'll talk about tonight's game about Union, and look ahead to Friday's game as well, as Emory will travel on the road to take on South Summit. Joining us right now for that conversation, we have head coach Jeff Centenaris. And Coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate you getting me on.
Absolutely, Coach. We'll start by talking about the game this past Saturday. I thought it was a very inspiring effort for this team. Early on, it was difficult because I didn't know how the officials were going to let the game be called. I mean, there was obvious height advantage in Juan Diego's favor, although the boys played a physical brand of basketball, and ultimately that's how you're going to have to combat, you know, playing two kids that are 6'6", and not having a kid in the lineup that's under 6'1". Kids played physical. There was a great effort there, I thought, on Saturday night.
I was extremely proud of how hard our guys played and matched their physicality. Like you said, they had a lot of bigs. Their guards are not only bigs but strong. And you know, and our guys didn't back down to that at all. I thought at our younger levels we backed and shied away from some of that physicality, and I kind of got after our team for that. But you know, my senior group and my varsity group didn't back down from the physicality at all, and that's the reason that we gave ourselves a chance to win.
Going back to the contest itself, Coach, offensively, it was concerning early on when Riggs picked up a couple of quick fouls and you had to really roll with him on the bench for the majority of the first half. And then there were times where Trevin Brazier would come out of the game and I wondered where the offense was going to come from. But it goes back to a previous conversation we had. There wasn't a huge drop-off, especially on the offensive side of the floor.
No, I mean, we've talked about this. We are going to rely on everyone to contribute every night. And I said this day one to these kids that I want someone new every night we play to lead us in scoring, to lead us in rebounding, lead us in assists, and I mean that. And I keep hammering on to them that the only way we're going to be successful is if somebody new steps up every night. And you know, on a given night, we're going to need three or four guys to step up in order to beat teams. And so I was extremely happy with the way we got contributions from everybody. I mean, we didn't have a real big leading scorer. I think Trevin ended up being our leading scorer again, but you know, we got a lot of contributions from a lot of guys, and it was enough to keep us in the ball game. We just had a spell there to start the fourth quarter where we just didn't do a lot, and that really hurt us.
If we go back to that fourth quarter, Coach, and the way things kind of went for the team, obviously there were, I think, if I remember, four out of the first six possessions did not even get a shot attempt off. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Juan Diego is a very lengthy, very athletic squad, and they threw some different looks, and they're a very athletic squad. But on top of everything else, when you go back to that fourth quarter, what ultimately went wrong for this team on that side of the ball?
Well, just like you said, we didn't get a shot off and just had too many turnovers. And they came down and took advantage of those turnovers and scored about on every possession, you know, and turned a four-point game into a 20-point game within about 2 or 3 minutes. And so, you know, I told the guys, you know, sometimes our offense is going to go south on us a little bit. We got to keep working on it, but we can't have our defense go south at the same time. That's all about effort. And I just kind of thought, you know, we got frustrated that we turned the ball over and then we didn't get back and play good enough defense to keep us in a ball game. So it's a learning process. You just can't have both things go wrong at the same time. But, you know, I give Juan Diego a lot of credit. They're quick for being as big as they are and physical. They started to take advantage of what we were trying to do on offense. We just need to be a little bit smarter because they were giving us some wide open looks, and we just kept trying to jam the ball back to where we were doing it before. And they gave us some opportunities. We just had to do a better job of taking advantage of those opportunities.
It's a very good basketball team, and I'm not sure if you would agree with this or not, Coach, but just from what I've seen throughout the 3A classification over the last few years, that Juan Diego squad is as good as any team that we'll see at any point in time this year. I truly believe that, especially from an athletic standpoint.
Oh, I agree. I don't think we're going to have a lot of teams in the 3A classification that are going to bring that kind of size and experience. The biggest thing is experience. They returned four starters from a group that finished in the semis last year in 4A. And when you look at all of, 3A that's coming back, no one has that kind of experience coming back. So we're all dealing with kids that haven't seen the floor a lot in the varsity game. And that experience is big. And especially late in games, that experience takes over. And so I think when it comes to that, we're kind of, all on the same playing field. But we're going to see bigger teams than what we have. We're going to see physical teams, and I'm okay with the way we reacted the other night and how we played that we'll be just fine when we run up against that.
Coach, just looking at the way that the game ended up playing out, and again, having three quarters of some really good basketball, I thought there was an unfortunate call late in the third quarter that gave Juan Diego 2 points, and a buzzer beater in high school at any quarter can be somewhat of a momentum change. I don't know that contributed to the loss or anything in that matter, but there were some unfortunate things that did happen in this contest, and then, of course, with the loss. How did the team respond to you post-game in the locker room following the first setback of the year?
you know, they weren't happy, which is exactly what I want. I definitely don't want to walk in a locker room after a loss and have guys act like it's not a big deal, because it is a big deal, and these kids take it to heart. You know, they wear that on their sleeve, and that's what I like about them. We came back Monday for practice, and, you know, they were ready to move forward, which is exactly what you have to do. You have to let it sting in the moment and realize and learn from what you did or didn't do, and then you have to move forward and look to your next opponent. So I was pleased with the way we reacted. Obviously don't want to make that a habit of reacting to losses, but for the way that we did react, you know, and I guess we'll find out tonight playing our next game just how we are reacting. But so far it seems in practice this week that we're ready to go.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Emory Sport and Boys basketball team, gearing up for the second home game, third game together of the season tonight against Union. And Coach, Union is a team that was on the court last night on the road. They went up against Uinta. Uinta comes away with a 19-point win. When you look at this Union squad, they do have a couple of kids that can score the basketball, that we know. But ultimately, it is a program that has been down over the last couple of years. Still, it's Emory and Union. And whatever sport we're talking about, basketball, football, baseball, volleyball, it's always a compelling matchup.
Yeah, Union is always puts tough-minded and physical kids on the baseball field, basketball floor, football field. It doesn't matter. They may not always have the most talented group, but they are going to compete every time you play them, no matter what sport. And so I expect that of a Union group tonight, and to come in and play hard for every second they're on the floor and not give us anything. Like you said, they don't have a lot coming back, and they did struggle last night, but, you know, it's a game-by-game situation, and you tend to make adjustments and see how that goes, and you can't take anybody lightly. So it's a team that we did play in the summer. We did have some success against them. I reminded our guys that summer is summer, and this is completely different. And so, you know, we just need to get after it and have our intensity tonight, and I feel like we'll be just fine.
Coach, ultimately, looking at the way the schedule shapes out, I mean, two games this week, and then next week it does pick up. It's a little bit more heavy next week with games on Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, three games in a four-day span. So still, Union South Summit this week, I mean, this is a solid schedule. It's a solid piece of the schedule before region play.
Oh, most definitely. You know, South Summit is a tough place to go and play, and we travel there Friday. Again, they are always a physical group. I'm known for their football. They put physical kids on the basketball floor that are tough-minded. Again, maybe not always the most talented basketball players, but they always produce some guys that can put the ball in the hole. So, you know, that's going to be a very tough place for us to go and play on Friday. You know, it's a game I like having on our schedule to prepare us for our region, because we have a lot of tough region opponents that we have to play on the road. And this will be a good test for us on Friday as well. And then, like you said, next week is a very tough week where we add one more game to the loop. And, you know, I'm excited. It's here. We're dealing with this COVID stuff with kids being gone and coaches and things like that. It's made it tough. But, you know, the biggest thing is we're playing and we're working through it. And I'm just excited that we're getting the opportunity.
No doubt. No question. Coach, before I let you go, I did miss one individual performance that I thought was definitely noteworthy going back to the game on Saturday against Juan Diego, and that was Kyson Curtis coming in and giving you some really, really solid minutes off of the bench. And to remain in contention with a team like Juan Diego, typically you have to have a kid come off the bench that can give you quality minutes like that. He did it in the post. He was able to really maneuver the ball around offensively. I thought he was great defensively. I thought Kyson Curtis was just a real bright spot for this team on Saturday night.
He was. You know, we missed Kyson in our first game on Thursday because he was out with the COVID virus. Was able to come back today for us last week. And, you know, we really needed him that night, especially with the size that Juan Diego presented us. You know, it would have been a lot rougher without him out there. And I thought he played well. He didn't miss a beat for missing him, you know, over an entire week with us. He was a little rusty and didn't know some of our out-of-bounds plays that we had worked on during the week, but, you know, you work through those things, and I thought he gave us great effort and energy, and just excited to have him back. He's a very talented basketball player and someone who's going to, you know, be a big part of our program this year and see a lot of minutes for us, and I only anticipate him getting better.
Yeah, and I keep going back to it. I mean, it's something you said weeks ago. You could go 12, 13 guys deep, and you feel comfortable doing it. And, Coach, I know it's a short sample size, but really the bench has just been phenomenal over the last two games.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the minutes our guys have come in off the bench and gave us. you know, there's not a lot of super big scores there, but when you get three or four or five guys to come in and contribute a bucket, a couple rebounds and a steal, you know, it all adds up, and that's all I'm asking them to do. We don't need any superstars on our team. We just need guys who want to contribute and play hard every time they're on the floor. And so far I'm getting that, and, you know, I don't anticipate that changing.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time. Best of luck tonight. We'll see you at the game.
Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Emory Spartan basketball team. Do not forget, live coverage tonight will begin at 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow at 7. I'll be joined in the studio by Scott Labrum. Looking forward to tonight's contest. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports on the way. When we return, we'll move over and talk college football. We have the playoff rankings released last night. We know we have an epic ACC rematch for the championship of that conference coming up between Notre Dame and Clemson next Saturday. How will that impact the college football playoffs? And what's the Big Ten going to do with Ohio State? All that and more coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
A third set of rankings for the college football playoffs released last night. And in my mind, it became abundantly clear that we're down to the final, I'm going to say seven. I think there's a realistic chance for seven to get in, although that seven could probably be narrowed to six. I think anybody outside of that top seven is pretty much done, including Oklahoma, who will have a chance for the Big 12 championship. And again, it's razor thin for the Big 12 to get a team in, because there has never been a two-loss team sneak into the playoffs since it began. Two losses have pretty much proven to be it. Lose twice, you're more than likely done. Both Iowa State and Oklahoma have two losses. Oklahoma outside the top 10 right now. Could they jump Miami? Yes. Georgia? Yes. Cincinnati? Yes. Florida, Texas A&M, Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama. No, they're not going to jump those squads. Even if they have a Big 12 championship, I think Oklahoma's done. Iowa State wouldn't have to jump as many teams, but they would need a lot of help. First off, they would need Alabama to beat Florida. That's how you jump that spot. They would probably need Northwestern to knock off Ohio State. And then you would have to pit a Power 5 champion up against a team that lost one game, did not win a conference championship. Maybe you could climb over the top of Ohio State. Maybe Notre Dame beats Clemson. You take them out of the picture. It's razor thin for Iowa State to get in. It looks like the Big 12 is most certainly going to be left out. So, again, we can talk about seven, but let's really look at this from a realistic standpoint and say six teams have a chance to get in, one through six. I think Alabama is in regardless. Alabama gets Arkansas coming up this weekend. 31-point favorites in that game. If they lose to Arkansas, it would be the first loss to Arkansas since 2006. Just assume Alabama gets a win there. And once they get to the SEC championship, I believe Bama can lose, and they still get in. And I think a loss for Bama in the SEC championship would be a disaster for Notre Dame, Clemson, and maybe even Ohio State, because it would put two SEC squads in, which means someone inside that top four is going to be left out, because I just don't see the committee keeping Bama out of the playoffs for two consecutive years. They still manage to get in. Even with a loss, I think they still get in. So, beat Arkansas, you're a lock. That takes us to number two, Notre Dame. The Irish should be a lock. They should. I don't believe they are, but they should be a lock. They've already beat Clemson once. And this is my problem with conference championship games. Notre Dame defeated Clemson once. I don't want to hear about who was on the field and who wasn't on the field when that game took place. You should not have to beat a team twice to prove anything, especially when that second game comes at a neutral site. Now, they've said they're going to let about 5,000 people in to the conference championship game. Again, I don't even know why the ACC is playing it. You're going to make minimal money off the gate. You're only going to let 5,000, 6,000 people in? Minimal. You're going to lose a lot more if Clemson loses, because You go from one team to two teams. You're going to lose a lot more if Notre Dame loses and Clemson gets in and the Irish don't. I don't even know why the ACC is playing it. I think they should cancel the game and give Notre Dame and Clemson, it should be a lock. This 2-3 matchup would be a semifinal game in the playoffs, not an ACC title game. The Irish should be a lock. I don't believe they are. Here's how Notre Dame could be left out. Let's say that Notre Dame just gets destroyed in this contest. It's 2 or 3 scores. Right now, Clemson is favored by 7 in this game. Let's say that Clemson finds a way to get the running game going. Travis Etienne was held to 18 yards against the Irish earlier this year in South Bend. That has nothing to do with Trevor Lawrence, by the way. It has nothing to do with the pieces that Clemson was missing defensively. And that should give Notre Dame fans hope that they can beat Clemson again, because they really made the Tigers a one-dimensional squad. And if they happen to do that again in the ACC title game, I think we're going to have a close contest. But let's say that Clemson gets the rushing attack rolling. Notre Dame loses by 2 or 3 scores. Then let's say Florida beats Alabama in the SEC championship game. And let's say Ohio State defeats Northwestern. Notre Dame could have a problem on their hands. Because again, I believe Bama's a lock. All they have to do is beat Arkansas, they're a lock. They're the number one team of the country. The committee has viewed them the best team of the country all year long. If they get a win, they're in this Saturday. Notre Dame loses. We'll say that drops them to 3. Ohio State gets a win. They're a conference champion. Let's say that elevates Clemson to 3, or Ohio State to 3. That drops Notre Dame to 4. And let's say Florida beats Alabama. Florida's getting in if they win the SEC championship. That's how Notre Dame could be left out. And again, if that happens, I feel bad for the Irish because they've already beaten Clemson. And that will be their 11th game, double the amount of what Ohio State has played. I think they should be a lock, but I see a scenario in which Notre Dame does not get in. They still control their own destiny, but I don't believe they are a lock. Let's look at Clemson. I think Clemson is likely out if they lose to Notre Dame for a second time, but I don't think it's a death punch. If Clemson loses, they could still have a chance if Alabama wins the SEC. If Bama wins the SEC, I think Clemson still gets in, even if they lose to Notre Dame, and it's another nail-biter. And I say that because, again, I'm going to go back to the Big 12 scenario. Are you going to take Iowa State at 2 losses, Oklahoma at 2 losses, or Clemson at 2 losses? Who are you going to take? Conference championship doesn't matter at this point, right? Who's the better team? Because that's what the committee has said all year long. It's the eye test. I would take Clemson over Iowa State. I would take Clemson over Oklahoma. So I think there's a chance that Clemson could still get in. Now, the one argument that you would have for Clemson not getting in would be Texas A&M. It wouldn't be Iowa State. It wouldn't be Oklahoma. In my eyes, it would be Texas A&M. Maybe an undefeated Cincinnati. Committee does not view the Bearcats as a legitimate threat, obviously, because they dropped one spot from 7 to 8. They put Iowa State above Cincinnati. Okay, so you really think that Clemson, I mean, just being realistic here, the Tigers could have a legitimate argument to still get in. We're talking about 2 lost teams at that point in time. And if it's not a 2 lost team, it's Texas A&M. So Clemson wants to avoid that conversation. There's no doubt. They win, they're in. It's simple. Same thing for Notre Dame. They win, they're in. Notre Dame, there's a lot that would have to happen for the Irish not to get in. Clemson wins, they're in. Then we can talk about Ohio State. I don't know. Obviously, the Big Ten views their conference championship as a must for Ohio State. Otherwise, they wouldn't have adjusted the rules. Okay? Now we know Ohio State's going to play. Let's say they already have a pretty strong playoff case because, again, we're going to the eye test. They appear to be one of the top 4 teams, and that's what we're going off of, right? If you're going to consider a 5-0 team number 4, everything is based off of the eye test. That's what I'm saying. We can throw conference titles out right now. Because the Big Ten waived that 6-game clause, Ohio State wins, and I believe they are in, no question. If Ohio State loses, I just don't see how you could keep them in. But let's look at this. If Clemson beats Notre Dame and Florida beats Alabama, Would the number of games that Ohio State played be a point that the committee would have to look at and say, they only played six games? Is that something the committee would even look at? Because then your argument would be Clemson and Bama are in. Are we taking Notre Dame and Texas A&M or Ohio State? That would be the question at that point in time. So, again, there's a clear path for the top six teams. Florida wins, they're in. Texas A&M, they need some help. They need Bama to win, and they would need Notre Dame to beat Clemson. Both are possible, and Texas A&M would get in. Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama, it's simple. They control their own destiny. Outside of that top seven, it's very, very grim. I just don't see how Oklahoma could leap seven teams with a victory over a two-loss Iowa State. Much more plausible that Iowa State leapfrogs three teams, to get in to the top four, knowing that Clemson and Notre Dame play each other, Alabama and Florida play each other. It's much more plausible for Iowa State at this time. So I think we've taken the field, and with the rankings that were released last night, we've shrunk to a field of seven. Razor-thin chance for Iowa State. I love college football. I love this talk. I love it. That's what makes college football, college football. We have this controversy, we have these scenarios, and when you get down to the final week or weekends of the regular season, because we don't have conference championships this week, Iowa State, Oklahoma, that's on the 19th. Notre Dame, Clemson, it's on the 19th. Same with Bama and Florida. December 19th is going to be a can't-miss day of college football. It's almost like the opening round of the playoffs. But what makes it so much more interesting than the opening round of the NFL playoffs is you could lose, and you still have a chance. It's not like it's a double elimination tournament, but it kind of is for some teams. December 19th, it's can't-miss college football day. We're going to take a quick commercial break. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back set to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. Close it out by talking high school. The game coming up tonight, 6:30, live pregame coverage will begin. Emory at home taking on Union, game three of the season for the Spartans, looking to jump that 500 barrier and rebound from loss on Saturday. I'll be joined by Scott Labrum in the broadcast booth again. Live coverage at 6:30, tip-off at 7. Do not forget, you can listen to live broadcast as well at CastleCountryRadio.com. The Carbon Dino Boys basketball team will begin just a brutal, brutal stretch. Tonight, they're on the road to take on Delta. Long road trip. Back home tonight, and then tomorrow, they'll be at Uinta. And then on Friday, they have to play North St. Pete. That's a brutal three-game stretch. Take it a step further. Monday, they're at Union. Tuesday, they're at North Sevier. Man, that is just an insane travel schedule. And we talked to Coach Butler about that last week. And you want preparation for winning three games in 3 days at the state tournament? There's a good start right there. It's a lot of basketball in a short period of time. Coming up this Friday on KRPX, our sister station, we are going to have a doubleheader. The Carbon Lady Dinos will take on Desert Hills. That game's at 5:30. And then the boys will follow immediately after with their contest against North St. Pete. So a doubleheader on KRPX where you'll be able to follow the Dinos all season long. Tonight and tomorrow's road games, non-region road games, they will not air on KRPX, but we will be back at it on Friday. Friday home games, a lot of those for Carbon moving forward. Next Friday, it'll be another home game against South Summit. That's a team that Emory gets to see this Friday. So, boy, it's a fun time of the year. It really is. On the show tomorrow, we will talk fantasy football. It should be playoff time for you if you're still active. Here's the thing about fantasy. We can tie it back into what's happening in the NFL. For instance, Carolina Panthers and Christian McCaffrey. If you play fantasy football and you have Christian McCaffrey, he's pretty much been dead weight on your roster all year. You maybe have won the three or four games that he has played just because when he has played, he's been dynamic. But now he's dealing with a quad injury and a hamstring. Everything else seems to be fine. The ankle's fine. The AC joint's fine. Now it's a quad and hammy. So we don't know if Christian McCaffrey is going to play. And then we have some great matchups. Some matchups that have huge playoff implications in the actual league outside of fantasy. So we'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. We'll also turn our attention to high school wrestling. We'll be joined tomorrow by Coach Kirk Christiansen of the Emory High Spartan squad. Wrestling has gone through even more of a headache scheduling-wise than any of the other sports, if that's even at all possible. Wrestling has so many guidelines that you have to hit. And so we'll talk to Coach Christiansen about that. It'll be a fun show tomorrow. And again, we'll be with you tonight as we bring you Emory High School basketball. I want to thank Coach Jeff Cincinnatus for taking out the time to join us. We will catch you tomorrow. Be safe. I am out.